Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, it's the Real Blend Top 10 lists with our individual lists and the show's collective top five.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit, too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 333 of Real Blend.
Oh, it's a Sean number.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's where I want to start. It's going to be a podcast episode that's very special to me for a number of different reasons. If my family listened to this, they would tell you that 33 is my lucky number. It's the number on the side of the Rolling Rock bottle, which is something we drank all the time in high school. It's Larry Bird's number. And it's a cosmic number that just kind of appears to me all the time at random moments. Kevin and I talk about numerology a lot. It's not like I'm super into that, but the number 33 pops up an awful lot of times.
So this is going to blow your mind even more.
Okay.
My live shot today is at 3:33 p.m.
There you go. See, that's just a thing. So the fact that this is episode number 333, we are closing out the year. We are doing our top tens, and this is going to be my final episode of Real Blend. No, I'm only kidding. This felt special. This felt like a good reason to do number 333. So let's dive into it. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend, a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. We are going to be revealing our top 10 films of 2024, all leading to the Real Blend official top five movies of the year list. Let's get into it. Let's close out 2024. Let's set up 2025 in a big, big way for the Real Blend audience by introducing Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, and producer Gabe Kovach. Hello, boys, for the last time this year. How are we all doing?
Good, baby. How are you?
I'm good. Very, very good.
Good to see you, Sean.
This is bittersweet. This is one of my favorite episodes. I love running through everything that we have coming up, but we're going to disappear for a couple of weeks. We're going to take some holiday time off, and then we'll regroup. Then we got a lot of things coming up in January and February and a couple other really exciting things planned for the year. So you guys make sure you want to hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, follow along with us on our YouTube channel or all the different places that you get your podcast needs met. This community has been growing. Let me tell you guys, just behind the scenes at Cinema Blend, I set a professional goal for us to hit 25,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. I believe at last count, we were up to 43,000. Really great. I mean, way exceeded expectations. It's been phenomenal to see the show grow the way that it has. We thank you guys for listening. We thank all of our guests who come on this year to talk about their films. And I think we're going to talk about some of their movies in our lists as we go. Let's see. What do we have to get to? Oh, of course, Real Blend Premium. If you guys want to sign up for Real Blend Premium, get your ad-free version of the show. A newsletter from me every other Friday. Check the description for information on where you can sign up. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right to our lists, right? This is one of my favorite episodes of the year. I love that it's episode 333. I can't emphasize to you guys enough how happy that makes me. Let me turn it over to Gabe, who will give a quick rundown of how this works. It's pretty self-explanatory. You guys have heard the top 10 lists before, but just to give you an idea of how we're going to do it. Gabe, what's the setup this year?
Yeah, so pretty simple. We're going to go 10 through 1. We're going to kind of snake around each of you. So each of you will give your 10, then each of you will give your 9, so on and so forth. At the end of it, I take those and I sort of generate scores based on how highly they're placed, and I'll reveal sort of our top five. The way that the sort of reveals are going to go is that if your pick, let's say Sean's number 10 is Kevin's number 3, Sean will give what his number 10 is, but he will hold on to his review or his thoughts about why it's there until we get to the highest placement. So let's say it's, like I said, Kevin's number 3. When we get to Kevin's number 3 and it's the same one, they'll all kind of discuss why it ended up on their list and where. That way we're not kind of talking about the same thing, you know, more than once, and it just makes things move a little bit easier. This will all be self-explanatory, as you see, when people discuss or don't. I will discuss when we get to revealing the top five. I'll give you more about scoring, tiebreakers, and things like that. But for now, Sean is kicking us off with his number 10. Kevin has a question.
Can I just say one thing? This is like the first year, I think at least, where I really don't know what any of your top 10s are. I feel like over the time period, we can kind of guess throughout the year what our number ones or number three, whatever it was going to be.
I think this is the weirdest year. I'll say that. Looking at Real Blend's top five, maybe weird is like strong. It's just the most different year. Like, I feel years,
to your point, I like more, even more so than like all of our individual top tens. To your point, like, I feel like I know what the Real Blend top five is going to be, and I have no idea what the, like, you know, I kind of can go into it and go, I have a feeling that our collective number one is going to be this, or it's at least going to be that. I have no idea what the collective Real Blend top five is going to be.
Well, and I kind of stopped, strategically, I stopped talking about certain things.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
I wanted to keep my cards a little close to the vest this year. Because sometimes we do in the thread, we just blurt it all out. Yeah. It's not fun. So sure.
This is one of our most fun episodes of the year. We've got more fun ones coming. But yes, without further ado, let's get to the movies. And Sean, you're kicking us off with your number 10.
My number 10 is Alien Romulus.
Wow.
Fede Alvarez is Alien Romulus. Yeah.
Already getting spicy.
Wow. I mean, I don't know how spicy it is. I loved this movie when it came out. Revisited it to make sure that I actually wanted it in my top 10. We have had this conversation a number of times. 10 and 9 usually end up meaning you're bumping something out. I will get to some of the alternate picks, I think, at the end. Gabe, we're going to talk about those. But you'll be surprised to hear some of the things that like won't make my top 10 because I wanted Romulus in there. Yeah. Gabe and I were sort of texting about this when I shared my list with him. He really nailed it. It makes you feel like you were sitting in a movie theater in 1979, watching an alien film that has just been sort of like rediscovered, dusted off. Somebody put it into their VCR player and you got to revisit that world right between Sir Ridley and then when James Cameron took over. I'm a huge fan of Kaylee Spaney. I think she was fantastic. I thought some of the action set pieces were unbelievably great. But the production design was fantastic. I'm blanking on the name of the kid who plays David, the android, but he was phenomenal as well, too. Yeah, if someone can look that up really fast. Just great performances. I kind of went into this with really low expectations. I didn't expect, you know, I think it's the eighth Alien movie at this point now. And remember sitting in the movie theater just being completely blown away by how much fun I was having with it. So
it was funny, Sean. You actually, yeah.
David Johnson played Andy. Andy was the character.
You got his name right.
All right. Funny. I was borderline close. So wrestled back and forth a little bit. I'm a little upset at some of the things I had to leave off, but I did want to keep Romulus in the top 10. So that's where
I love that this made somebody's top 10. This would probably be, I don't have an official list, and I have several that I need to catch up on before the end of the year. But this, I was putting it together as I was reading through. This is in my top five, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How much I love this movie. Yeah.
I think it's a great pick. And I also, I love it because it's not one that I was considering. And, you know, cause I liked the film. I didn't love it. But one of my favorite things this year in particular is seeing all the behind the scenes footage of this movie.
Yeah.
The gigantic practical effects that they were using. There are some of them. I mean, that performance by David Johnson, I think, is one of the best performances of the year. And you mentioned Kaylee Spaney. I don't know if Civil War is on anybody's lists, but I do want to mention her because she had an amazing, amazing year. Yeah.
We shall see. All right. We go to Kevin. Kevin, what's your number 10?
My number 10 was my number one when I first saw it.
Whoa.
And a lot of things I've seen since then have obviously brought it down. But I rewatched it
just about.
It's so hard because I was texting with Gabe about this the other day. Like a lot of, you know, making a favorite list is tough because we struggle.
Well, here,
I'll
give the behind the scenes. If you want to know how tough of a time Kevin had, he sent me, I think, 3 or 4 different lists at one point. he was trying to juggle with. Eventually was like, I was like, just let me know whenever you nail it.
Jake mentions this too. Like you'll go back and look at your list next year at this time.
Yeah,
you'll
be like, you'll go back and look at our list next week.
Probably right. And just be like, did I do that?
Yeah, so. I mean, my list changed between 10 p.m. last night and 8 a.m. this morning.
Well, I always say 1 through 6 is easy. 1 through 6 is no problem whatsoever. For me, it's 7, 8, 9, and 10.
I agree. And so my number 10 is Late Night with the Devil, which I found to be a brilliant idea and concept. If you haven't seen it, it's a late night show. David Dasmachin's character, essentially, there's an exorcism performed live on television. It takes place in real time. They use different aspect ratios to kind of juxtapose the behind the scenes stuff, which I thought was so cool. It's like a, you know, you go into this live show and then you go behind the scenes in black and white during the commercial breaks and the chaos that ensues. And the performances are incredible. The practical effects are amazing. I just think this film was brilliant. And it was, when I first saw it, I think back in March,
it
my
was
favorite
your
film of the year.
You talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I hope people check it out. I rewatched it the other night. I think it's remarkable, and I hope more people get a chance to see it.
Is it on Shudder? Is that how you saw
it? It's on Hulu. You can watch. I just watched it a couple nights ago, Kev, for the
first
time. I really enjoyed it. I gave some time away from it. It was one of those things I didn't get to catch. Like, I didn't have the chance to catch it until people had already, like, talked it up, and I was like, I'll get to this later. I don't want to watch it while it's, like, people are so high on it. I don't want to go in with expectations. So I gave it some time, let it come to me sort of thing. And I really enjoyed it. I thought that I was curious what the budget was. I'm seeing like $2 million.
Very low. Yeah.
A little girl is great. A little girl.
The girl is great. Is I love, to your point, the way that like the non behind the scenes, like the movie itself, like the bulk of what's happening is all told through the TV cameras of like a late night show, which is really smart, really brilliant. Performances are great. I thought it was it was like a fun little horror movie. And I mean that in the best way of like there's a horror movie where you can give someone that it's like a whole meal and you're like, all right, you got to take the time, sit down and endure this or whatever. And this is like, this is really entertaining. It hits all the sort of classic things that you might want if you're a horror fan. And I think it's a really cool little twist on the sort of exorcism take of horror.
There's a shot in that movie when they're going to break where she's just staring at the camera. Mm. And it's like that has stuck with my stomach for so long. Because I won't go into spoilers if you haven't seen it, but you're talking about the budget. I still don't know how they pulled off some of those effects, especially with the little girl when she's dealing with whatever she's going through.
It's hard to girl too. You know,
that's, yeah.
I can't find an official source to confirm this. This is just one of those Google picks, so I don't know what this is pulling from, but it's saying a visual effects budget of $150,000, which is even crazier to think that like
that's wild.
So little of that $2 million went to given the visual effects, how great they are in them.
And David's one of the best character actors of our time. Like
really
that guy is amazing, and I think he's every time I see him in a movie, I know it's going to be good. I know Dune, Dark Knight. I mean, he is just
incredible. He swings. That's a guy who doesn't. Yeah. He always swings.
All right. Speaking of a guy who swings.
Hey, I really love the vibe that all of our top tens collectively have together. Because my number 10 is Long Legs. I feel like our three tens just are these really nice. And also, to your point, when we talk about some of the movies that didn't make it so that I could put Long Legs on my list, you know, we often talk about all the different factors that go into choosing a movie on our top 10. And Long Legs had something for me that I don't really think any other list or movie on my list had, which is sort of the experience of urging me to go down these like Reddit deep dives and conspiracy theories and you know, the finding of there's a certain character who can be seen in the background of a lot of the shots, which are in some are a little bit apparent. I think whenever I saw the film theatrically the first time, I think I spotted that particular character maybe twice and thought, oh, that was cool. Yeah. Only to discover that he's actually in the background, like around 15 different times, I believe. And just different, you know, Nicolas Cage's performance and just different little subtle things that I never even noticed upon first watch that made subsequent rewatches so much fun. I bought it the first day it became available on VOD and just had so much fun kind of going frame by frame and forward and backward. And oh my God, look, he was actually in the show. You know, Nicolas Cage is actually in that shot in the background the whole time. And you never realize it because your focus is over here. Just things like that. I had so much fun with just, for lack of a better word, the experience of that. And, you know, it is sort of a very Silence of the Lambs kind of old school 90s thriller. You know, I imagine, you know, in the same way that they did with Alien Romulus, I picture all these like different nostalgia, you know, like VHS covers that I think would have been, you know, covered in dust on a Blockbuster shelf in the horror section. I loved it. I loved sort of the the reveal. I loved what it all ended up being, not to ruin anything. It just absolutely worked for me. And Cage's performance, you know, talk about, you know, we were talking about actors who, you know, love, you know, chewing up the scene. When Cage is basically told, dude, go nuts, do what you want, you get something special, man. And what he did with that part, I ate up, man. I loved it. Yeah.
All right. Number nine, we're snaking around. Jake, you are still on the hook. You can reveal your title, but you will hold it.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I had a feeling that Long Legs I'd be able to talk about, and I had a feeling my number nine, I would have to hold it. A comfort movie for me that I'm grateful to have the screener for, because I have literally turned it on and just let it play multiple times. My number nine is A Complete Unknown.
Nine. What the fuck is wrong with you? Wow.
It's so funny. Wild. Well, when we get into the conversation later, I had it higher. It's moved around a lot on my list, to be honest with you.
Yeah. All right. Jake's got Long Legs and A Complete Unknown. Kev, you are at number eight for you, and you get to talk about it.
I'm number nine for me, right?
You're number nine. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. My number nine is probably not going to be on anyone else's list.
It's not, because you can talk about it.
Is Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There you go.
And I preface it like that because it is a shocking film to probably end up on a top 10 because it's an action comedy.
Right.
But it is one of my favorite franchises of all time. I love the Bad Boys films. I had an absolute blast watching this movie. I probably should have put it higher. And honestly, I think Adil and Bilal are incredible. I think they've done a great job with this franchise. What they did on 3 was amazing. Sean, you and I loved 3.
Yes.
The fourth one to me was
I think they're slipping. I think
really?
To me, 1 is still the best. 2 is a little bit. I know we switch on that. Then I like 3, and then I like 4. I still enjoy if they could. Those two could make 5 more of these, and I'm in. Yeah. I don't care. But I think that they're gradually declining.
I think for me, I just like spending time with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence's characters.
Sure.
I like whatever situation they're put in. I think the action in this film is incredible. There's some wicked drone shots that are amazing. I do like the Sun storyline. I think there's, to me, it was just the type of film I saw in the early 2000s. I remember seeing Bad Boys 2 and just an incredibly over-the-top, ridiculous action comedy. And I love it. I love that film. I've seen it 3 times, and I have no problem putting it on my top 10, but I know it's a weird choice in the sense of like movies we talk about, like from an Oscar perspective.
They found the perfect filmmakers to continue that franchise.
Yeah.
Those guys have such a passion for Bay. They do their own thing, but still fit into the, like, just Martin Lawrence catching the Skittles like mid-gunfight. Oh. It's just... Dude. Hilarious.
Dude, that movie, that is, I would put that movie on every weekend and I would never get bored.
It's back because, I did. I was like just zooming through Netflix looking for something to put on. And I just rewatched the opening sequence when he goes into the convenience store. Them dogs been on there a long time. It's funny.
It's
I enjoyed
so good.
It. All right. Yeah. I'm with you. All right. My number 9, which I get to talk about, I'll talk briefly. I picked Anna Kendrick's Woman of the Hour.
Oh,
I
think.
Great movie.
I think not only is it a really impressive film, it keeps you really guessing in terms of where it's going. I think it announces her as a really exciting filmmaker. I hope she continues to make movies. I hope this wasn't a one-off. I would like to see what she continues to do, because I think that this movie threads a really difficult needle between being a suspenseful thriller involving a serial killer on a game show, but it also makes really insightful commentary about being a female performer in Hollywood, specifically during that time. But I think a lot of things that it's trying to say are still relevant today, unfortunately. This rampant sexism that was facing actresses in the, was it the 70s? Was it the 70s? As far back as the 70s? And but she also brings that sort of biting sarcasm that is, you know, sort of prevalent in her performances to almost cut through it. And my favorite part in the movie is when she takes over the game show and she's like, I'm going to start grilling these, you know, idiots who are contestants, and almost proving that this whole thing is a farce without her even realizing that the third contestant is a serial killer. The asides that it takes to show the attacks that other women are facing with that guy are just as harrowing as any of the stuff that Fincher does. So the fact that she was able to balance tone and never really lose sight of what she was trying to tell in that story is extremely commendable to me. The final shot of the last girl who essentially has to like lie to him and tell him that he did a good job as he attacked her just so she can get away. And the police finally come, they get him, and she lets out that guttural scream,
which is a real detail, by the way. I read up a little bit on the case, and apparently that's that specific detail of, you know,
I mean,
of the things that she said to him were, you know, based in fact.
Really? So, I mean, that whole thing plays. It was like it's like two stories being told. Like one, you're actually telling yourself this stuff and living through this horrible one-sidedness of the sexism to make it in an industry that you probably don't even want to be in, that a lot of people don't even want to be in, the film industry or the entertainment industry, versus a girl who has to put on a performance like that to save her life. And those two pieces, it's really hard to fit them together, I think, you know, into a movie that still keeps itself going. And I thought Anna Kendrick did an incredible, incredible job of pulling that off as a filmmaker while also starring in it. So I was really, really impressed by that. I wanted to make sure it got some recognition on my list.
Love that.
So.
Love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Great performances throughout it. And again, I really hope that she directs something. So I don't know if she has anything lined up. So I hope that she continues to direct because I thought that was fantastic. We're going to throw it to a really quick ad break. And on the other side, we'll keep going on the top 10 lists.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. The holiday season is here, and what makes a better gift than one that keeps on giving, like a lifetime membership to Rosetta Stone? It's perfect for anyone looking to learn or improve their language skills. Rosetta Stone has been trusted for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's designed for long-term retention with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. And it's available on desktop and mobile, so you can continue to learn whenever and wherever is best for you. Give your family and friends the gift of language with 50% off all 25 languages for a lifetime and no shipping fees. RealBlend listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off when you visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
And we are back, diving into pick number 8. It's a snake draft, so I am still on the clock, and I'm going with the documentary Superman, the Christopher Reeve story.
How was that not on the Oscar shortlist for best documentary?
It didn't make it. You're kidding me. Gosh, I didn't even know that.
Isn't that crazy?
I wonder if there's like a technical reason. Did it premiere somewhere?
Wasn't it a Fathom release date, and then they made a release date for it? I think. If I could be wrong, it's Fathom, but I know when it first came out,
it did come out as a Fathom.
I think it just didn't. I don't think it has anything to do with it. I think it just didn't make it because that was. I saw a lot of people online upset.
Make any sense?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. It's a tremendous documentary. It's tells the story of Christopher Reeve, obviously getting the part of Superman, but primarily focuses on his accident, which left him paralyzed when he was thrown from a horse. It has the blessing of the family, so it has this incredible wealth of archival footage of him as a young man to show how physical he was and how into the outdoors he was and horseback riding and sports with his kids as they were growing up and a lot of the him being a serious actor and almost being told by people around him, Jeff Daniels, William Hurt, like, don't go do this part. It's going to detract from your career. You're not going to be taken seriously from this point on. But I would argue, and it's funny, you know, in a year where Hugh Jackman comes back to play Wolverine, that those two are like the synonymous with they embody the role, mm-hmm. you know, they embody the part. And with Superman, that part, and it's funny, we're going to get into it with David Corenswet next year. It comes with this baggage of hope and optimism. And Christopher Reeve didn't shy away from it. He embraced it. And then had to apply it to his own life in order to, because there are parts in that documentary where he tells his wife, like, pull the plug. I don't think I should still be going, kind of thing. And she says, like, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And it was their love for each other that kept them going. I mean, I can't get through the documentary without crying. It's so incredibly well made. I wanted it to get on here. So I put it at number 8. So that's where I'm at. Kev, you are at 8. You were going to mention your 8. And then you will hold.
Number 8 is Dear Santa.
Yep. Top 3 for me, baby.
That's our number 1. No. My number 8 is James Mangold's A Complete Unknown. And I'm assuming we'll discuss that a little bit later.
What? He doesn't get shit for where he put it?
Yeah, it's just one more up.
True. Hey, it's right next to Bad Boys. I'm excited about that. It's one.
True. All right, Jake, you are going to mention your 8 and we are going to hold it.
Oh, interesting. My number 8 is September 5.
Okay.
I just watched that yesterday. Oh,
yesterday was December 17th. So you were way
off. Little late on that one. Little late. Yeah.
Boy, that movie is not catching on at all, huh?
It's not.
It's excellent. Not.
It's a shame. Well, we're going to talk about it a little bit higher.
And just a reminder, and I'm not trying to, but just a reminder that the Oscar prognosticators oftentimes have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, because it wasn't that long ago that Variety named September 5 the number one favorite film to win Best Picture.
Yeah. Did they?
So, yes. So you're trying to tell me that they just make this stuff up as they go?
Make it up.
They really do. It's an entire industry.
It really is.
Fueled by. If you go back and read coverage of Telluride, mm-hmm. I'd be really curious to see what movies were being discussed.
Saturday Night.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's... Oh, what happened to Saturday Night?
Sunday.
I at least would have thought Sunday. Jesus Christ. I would have thought that like it at least would have been like a contender for like a screenplay nomination. But it looks like it's going to get nothing, man.
So good.
But just to dwell on that for a second, like, isn't that what happens? We talk about the movie of the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
Saturday Night is great, though.
It's great.
It is. It's really good. But is it on any of our top tens?
No.
No,
not mine. I'm really happy that so far, most of the things that we're picking are stuff that have opened much earlier.
Yeah. I'm enjoying this list. This is good. Yeah. Great list. So, yeah.
Jake, you get to give your 7 and you are holding it.
Holding it. Got it. My number 7 is a little independent film called Wicked.
Ooh. Evan, you are giving your 7 and you also are holding it.
My number 7 is Dune Part 2.
Oh, my number 7 is also Dune Part 2.
Okay.
And I was a little concerned. We're both holding it.
I was a little worried because I know you both loved Dune Part 2. I love it too. I would say it's why it's in my top 10, and we'll hold it and talk about it when we get to it. But I was worried that you guys were going to have that at your 1. So that's actually surprising to me that yours is 7.
No, it's a little low for me.
Okay.
All right. So I put it at 7 also. We're holding it. I'm going to announce my number 6. And we're also holding it. We're not going to get to talk about anything for a long time. My 6 is Strange Darling. So we'll get into Strange Darling in a little bit. We are at Kevin's number 6, and he gets to talk about it.
Hey!
Wait, I do?
That's what it says.
Wait, my number 6 you don't have on your list, Sean?
Let's see. What did you say?
Gabe, is this right? Oh. Okay. My number 6 is Wicked.
Whoa! I would have thought if anyone was guaranteed to have Wicked on their top 10, it'd be Sean.
Me too.
Didn't make it.
Best Picture. When did you start to hate Joy?
I think it's tremendous. I wouldn't put it above any of the ones
I chose. He's the kid. He's an enigma.
I'm so surprised.
I actually thought it wasn't going to make Kevin's, but that it would. When I was told I had to hold, I thought I had to hold for Sean.
I think
me too.
No, here's where you guys are getting a little bit confused. I do love Wicked. I think it's phenomenal. I did say I think it should win Best Picture.
Yeah.
But what I think should win Best Picture doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make my top 10. It feels like a Best Picture winner to me.
To let you guys, because I'd like you guys to start talking about the movie itself as well. But sure. I will reveal that it did make Sean's honorable mentions list.
It is. It was in the contention for 10-9 for a long time.
It's so funny. I thought Dune and Wicked were going to be so high on y'all's lists.
I think Wicked's
going to be the. Okay.
I think this is sort of interesting that Kevin and I get to talk about this together, because Kevin and I sat next to each other at the junket, got to sit down and have a drink after the movie. And Kevin, forgive me for saying this, but my recollection of that is both of us walking out going, that was really good. Like, we really enjoyed that. And I don't think particularly either of us were as bowled over as I eventually became over time. Hmm. Is it the same? It feels like the same thing happened to you, because I feel like we were at the same level, and the fact that we're each only one off on our top 10 feels like we both kind of had a matched progression of progressively falling in love with this movie.
You're 100% right, and I think this is a testament to the ability of a film to stay with you.
Yes.
And I think I remember we had a conversation about this, like, as Gladiator 2 and Wicked came out at the same time. And Gladiator 2 did not stay with me. I thought it was entertaining and fun to watch, but I didn't think it was anything that stayed with me. But then Wicked, when I walked out, same with Jake, we were both like, it's a little long. The middle section could have been clipped a little bit. The first hour was fantastic. But then I thought about it a lot more, and then I got the soundtrack, and I started listening to it a lot more. Yeah. And then I started rewatching it. I rewatched
the screener.
Yeah. And
very carefully choosing what our five plays are going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, so what's interesting about Wicked is there's so much good, no pun intended, in the film that I couldn't not put it on my top 10. And as I was rewatching it last night, I'm just truly amazed by, it feels like an old school Hollywood musical.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are actors of like the golden age of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like the way the performances, the nuanced aspects, Ariana's eyes and Cynthia, just everything about the way the performances are done physically, but emotionally.
It's the little things. Yeah. Yes. It's the little things more than the big things. Yeah.
These looks that Ariana gives, or, and I'm just watching
the wink when Cynthia winks at her at the end, when she's about to have her big moment and Ariana's tying what ends up being sort of the cape, and Cynthia doesn't even say, she just winks at her. And I'm just like, oh my God.
The last thing I'll say about it is this: Alice Brooks deserves an Academy Award nominee. Cinematography is brilliant. Nathan Crawley, who did the set design, that scene in the library with the spinning room.
That's great.
It's a remarkable cinematic achievement. Is it perfect? No. I still think the middle is a little long, but it's worth my top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jake.
No, I agree with you 100%. Everything I love about it, you know, like I said, you know, you and I had some issues with it coming out of it. Not to say that those issues don't still exist, but my love for what I love far outweighs my nitpicks for this and that, you know, in the same way, you know, I've had number ones on my list that aren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I love them. And here's the deal. I want to rewatch them. I often talk about an X factor for me is wanting to rewatch a movie. You know, it's such the ultimate, you know, punch me in the face, fourth world problem. But that, you know, on our screener app, we only have five plays of Wicked. I've used two already, so I have to be very selective about my last three.
Jake, you're number six. You get to talk about.
Really?
You do.
Wow.
My favorite part of the top tens is when you two are surprised.
That I don't know.
No one likes what I like. Wow. My number six is Challengers. A movie that I loved from when I saw it back in late March, early April. Loved the movie. Loved how it was just not what I was expecting. I knew going into it, I think I'd seen maybe a couple of like trailers, maybe just the image of the three of them sitting on the bed. And I just thought, oh, it's just going to be like a sexy tennis, like love triangle movie. But it ended up being one so meticulously and beautifully edited so that you're watching it and trying to figure out what's going on and what has happened at the same time. It's told out of linear order. It starts at the end, then it goes back to the beginning, then jumps in the middle, then goes back, you know. I thought all three performances were just spot on perfect. There is a moment that features a man taking a tennis ball and touching it to his tennis racket as a moment of symbolism that yielded an uproar in my packed theater that would rival any movie that I've seen this year. And I just thought I was so enamored with this relationship between these three people. And also, not that I just didn't know how I wanted it to play out. Like, I didn't know who I wanted to end up with who. I didn't know who I wanted to be happy, who I wanted to have their heart broken, who I wanted to be screwed, who I wanted to win the tennis championship.
Yeah.
It was so complicated and had me torn in so many different directions, much like the characters were. And for a movie that I walked in going, okay, I guess I got to see this for the junket. Let's just see what this is. To me, almost walking out emotionally exhausted, I just loved it.
Let me give you the hottest hot take that you two are not going to agree with in the least bit. Mikey Madison is getting the attention that Zendaya deserves for Challengers.
I will tell you that I think Zendaya should be getting far more attention than that she is. I don't know if it should necessarily come at the sacrifice of Mikey Madison, but
I think Zendaya in Challengers gives a performance that, that some people are not giving
I would agree with that 100%.
Like, she's amazing.
Yeah, why she's not a part of the Best Actress conversation, I do not know.
She has to be incredible for that love triangle to even matter. You know, she's so good.
I had that film in my honorable mentions, and just I want to mention two quick things. The brilliance of that film, the score, obviously Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
That score is remarkable. Incredible.
It's like a dance party. It's amazing. But my favorite thing about that film is the dialogue as a tennis match. The way that they speak to each other is like they're volleying the ball back and forth, and it is so smart. Like to edit.
Well, the structure of the film is that way too. Like every time they change the whatever timeline you're on, it's the ball going the other side. No, it's their fault or no, they're the, like it's
so smart.
As Sean beautifully pointed out to me, I think before the junket, we have now completed our Spider-Man actress gets their tennis movie trifecta.
Yeah,
because
that's true. Kirsten Dunst had Wimbledon.
Kirsten was in Wimbledon, and then
Emma had Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah,
and Zendaya's challenge.
Is it because the racket kind of looks like a web?
Oh,
is that
come
the secret, Sean?
Maybe
this is a movie podcast, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, with really deep analysis.
All right, Jacob, you are at number five. You give your five, and you hold it.
Wait, Jacob just gave six.
Yeah, so now he goes five.
That's right. Well, then that means that we are waiting on Kevin so that the three of us can collectively talk about Strange Darling, which is my number five.
Okay. Strangey. Kev, what is your five? You are giving it and holding.
Oh, my number five is also Dear Santa. Again, I put it twice in my list.
When a movie's that good, you can't hold it to one spot.
Kevin put Dear Santa nine times and then 10 at number one.
Yeah.
Deranged list.
You guys better hope the Farrellys don't listen to this.
I think they know the movie's bad, too.
They probably do.
Number five is The Substance.
Ooh.
Demi Moore and incredible Margaret Qualley. Right. We'll talk about that in a bit, though.
My five, we can talk about. It is September
5th. Yeah.
That's not on Jake's list.
No, it is on my
list. He had it earlier.
Yeah, I had it number eight.
Yeah. You talk about rewatchability. I went back and rewatched September 5, and it's still great, but it the first time through, it's so gripping.
I've only seen it the one time, and I saw it on the big screen.
Can I ask a quick question? Do you call it September 5 or September 5th?
I call it September 5.
I don't really.
Because there's not a TH.
Right, but like here's why on the air when I do TV segments and I put like September the release 5th. Date of a film, I put like if I'm writing the movie comes out November 20th, I just put November 20 and you assume the person fills in the th.
I would bet that they call it September 5 so that you don't create that confusion. September 5 coming out September 10th. You know, like
no matter which way you slice it, it's a terrible fucking.
It is a terrible title.
I think it ruined the film's chances of being recognized because it's so generic.
That coupled with all of the like promotional images that they've released for the movie are the most generic. Like I'm creating a montage of all my movies from my top 10 to put on social media a little bit later this week, and the images that were available for September 5 like are the most it's like someone looking at a TV, which like granted what
that's look, what the movie
that's
is
what the movie is you're exactly right.
I mean it's kind of a one location you know thing, and the one location is a TV studio, which can be one of the most drab places, and yet it was so riveting, you know, that first time through. For people who aren't aware, it takes place during the Munich Olympics. There is a terrorist situation. This sports broadcasting team has checked in for the day. They anticipate a slate of Olympic events that they're going to be covering for NBC News. They've got the NBC News anchor who's prepared to go through the normal day. And then this terrorist event takes place where these athletes are being held hostage. And the sports broadcasters have to figure out how to deal with breaking news. And underneath that are all of these really fascinating questions about how media works, what you are even able to, what technology allows you to do. Where can you bring a camera? How do you get a camera to go shoot something? There's a Jake mentioned this one time, too, after we were talking about it. There's a moment where they are filming the police officers as they are trying to get close to the bunkers, to the place where the athletes are. And the guys in the booth who are showing this realize, oh, wait a second. I think the terrorists can see this as well, too. Yeah. Like, should we not be showing this because maybe we're giving away? Like, and these are all real time decisions. And it's antiquated, right? Because it's the 70s that this took place. And now we have, as people told me during the junket, as the actor told me during the junket, you now wrestle with that decision because of this thing in your hand, because of the telephone in your hand. You wrestle with those decisions on a 30-second basis. Should I share this? Should I share this? Should I show what I'm showing? Should I do it? And all these people were deciding because it was going out to a global audience. So I found all of that fascinating. Now, if you don't care about any of that stuff, maybe this movie doesn't engage you. You know, like there were elements of like there's a significant subplot of this movie of just the fact that the network didn't have access to the satellite. Yeah. Because and they couldn't broadcast what was going on and they had to renegotiate with the other networks. Hey, give us that time slot. We'll do this time. I love that stuff. Like I'm a media news geek like that, and I loved it. So
I'm with you, Sean. Everything you said is spot on. I've talked about this before. I have a soft spot for movies about journalism. Yeah. By nature of working in a news studio. And look, I know that I for the most part cover entertainment, but I've also covered hard news. I've covered breaking news. I've covered very, very serious news. I've been live in the middle of very serious news. And I have such a love and respect for the people behind the scenes who work in our control room, who are the operating the brain of what goes out onto the air. And to take one of the most horrifying and influential moments of the 20th century and look at it through the prism of a television control room. Mm-hmm. It's such a unique way, especially, you know, I think it would be really cool to watch this as a doubleheader with Spielberg's Munich, mm-hmm. where you look at these events through the perspective of it's the first time in human history that a terrorist attack is being broadcast live on television. Mm-hmm. And then Spielberg's movie was more about the impact and the influence that those events had. But yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I often sort of talk about anytime you go to a place that has a do not do this sign, the joke is, well, okay, take me back. Something happened,
yeah,
that made someone put up that sign.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we have rules on live television. You know, if we are taking a car chase and someone gets out of the car and has a gun in their hand and starts waving the gun around, we cut the live feed. Mm. We instantly, it's not a question. We do not, you cut the live feed because you cannot show, you do not want to show someone being shot, someone being killed on live television. To that point, someone had to be the first person to make that decision.
Sure.
Someone had to be the first person to ask. And I think they do in September 5, the question that is asked, can we show someone being shot on live television?
Right.
Exactly. And of course, 50 years later, of course we say, no, absolutely you can't. But there was a moment where collectively we as a society went, well, we've never been in this situation before. So
sure.
Can we see that? It's a brilliant film, incredible editing. It moves flawlessly. And Kevin, to use something that you talk about a lot, there's a moment in the film where I knew what happened. I knew what happened. I knew how things worked out. But there was a moment in the film that was so convincing that made me pause and go, did I have that? Am I thinking of something else?
Yeah.
Did I remember this wrong? Beautiful film. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those that, sure, maybe it's not getting the Oscar love we wish it were getting right now. We will discover it and people will discover it in 10 years. And we're going to look back and go, hey, we were there all along.
Yeah, probably. I agree with that. All right. September 5. Put it on your list if you guys haven't seen it.
Great film.
I'm going to go to number 4. This is my number 4. This is one that I've been holding close because I kind of wanted to see if you guys would ever discover it. But my number 4 is Music by John Williams, the documentary. Holy hell, did this thing hit me like a battering ram. It's on Disney Plus. It is a very conventional documentary. It doesn't do anything out of the ordinary. It's just, here are the films that John Williams worked on, and here's John Williams telling you the stories of them. But John Williams is telling you the stories to people like Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford and George Lucas. And then you get people like some of the top composers in the world, Thomas Newman or Alan Silvestri, stopping by to just tell you how gobsmacked they are by John Williams's talent. And it's a series of behind the scenes stories on some of the greatest movies you've ever seen in your entire life. And it's John Williams sitting down at a piano in his office with Spielberg. And he'll say, yeah, don't you remember I played E.T. for you on this for the first time? Here's where I played you Jaws. And then he starts to play Jaws. And, you know, John Williams will talk about turning in the score for such and such. And then he goes, then I had to go figure out the five notes that I was going to do for Close Encounters. And I'm just like, stop, John Williams. You just want to wave a white flag and realize that, like, we have been in the presence of master isn't even a term that's worthy enough for him. Like, it's insane, this man's production. And it's insane, the genius level of stuff that he has produced for people. If you appreciate film score at all, and I believe me, I know we all do, and I know most of the people who are probably listening to this all do, but even knowing how much I love John Williams, and even knowing how impressive I thought his body of work was, this movie still said to me, like, you don't know anything. And this man is, he probably shouldn't even be on this planet. Like, he's unbelievable. So if you guys haven't watched it yet, please watch it. This thing shot to number four with a bullet for me, because I loved it. It could have gone on for 8 more hours. This could have been a Ken Burns level, you know, multi-work documentary, and I would have watched every single minute of it, because it's just John Williams telling stories about his incredible career. So shot that one up to number four.
Can I, I'm about to tell you something.
I know you have a photo with him. I know you have a picture with him.
No, I have two pictures with him. from two different instances, I got to go backstage after his concerts.
Yeah, it's awesome. Good for you.
The reason I have not brought myself to watch it.
Right. Because you're in it.
No. You guys know there was before this documentary was announced, I was doing my best to work on like a 30-minute John Williams special. And I was working really hard on it. And I was collecting all of these interviews, and he was going to come to town, and I was supposed to get a sit down with him. And it was going to be this really, like, Fox was going to give me like a half hour, and it was going to be this really great special. And I'd started, like, you know, I knew he was coming to town in like 3 months. So I started collecting all these like testimonials with people who'd worked with him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was coming along really well. And then, two things happened. I didn't end up getting the interview with Williams. And then like 3 days later, they announced this documentary. And it was, and the documentary, one, let me just go ahead and put this out there. The documentary, I've seen, at least seen the trailer. It is above and beyond anything that stupid little old me would have ever been able to produce. But there's a part of me that's just sort of like, that should have been mine.
Believe me, I know it's
in the same way that I would imagine, like, I don't know, like Christopher Nolan probably didn't want to rush out and make, because wasn't Christopher Nolan going to make a Howard Hughes movie? And like, after Scorsese's came out, that he was like, I don't want to go out and see that. Like, I'm sure I know it's amazing, but also like, I was going to do that.
Sure.
So there's a part of me, like I said, I could have never touched what I'm sure the movie ends up being. But there's a part of me that's just like, I can't watch it right now, because right now it still really bothers me that I didn't get to do that.
It's great. Please watch it when you get a chance to. Kev, your number five, you get to talk. Your number four, you get to talk about.
I do.
You do?
Wait, so does this mean Jake and I only have it on our list?
Apparently.
No. Oh. My number four is Strange Darling.
Well, it was on Sean's.
Yes.
Oh, it was earlier.
I had it at 10, 9, 8, 7. I had it at 6.
And then I had it at 5.
That's right. Okay, cool. All right. So Strange Darling. I mean, I remember seeing this film. I was floored by it. I had absolutely no idea what it was about before I went in. And I'm glad. And I think anybody out there listening to this podcast right now, I would recommend not knowing anything going in.
Yes.
J.T. Molnar did a great job directing it. Obviously, Kyle Gallner and Willa Fitzgerald are brilliant in the film. The only thing I will say is it's basically a one night stand that turns into like a vicious murdering spree. But outside of that, Giovanni Ribisi, who Sean did a great interview with for Real Blend, you can check it out. The cinematography he shot this film, it's remarkable to watch. There's a specific way that they use black and white at the end of the film, which I think is just genius. Willa Fitzgerald's facial expressions in this film are incredible. The way they captured my attention and flipped every single assumption that I had on its head. Like,
if there's justice, she should be getting consideration. Like,
yeah,
100%. If there was any justice in the awards conversation,
I would agree with that.
She should be getting conversation, and yet she gets none, which is ridiculous.
you know, I at the end of the day, I loved being wrong for the entire film. I was wrong. Every single assumption that I had about where characters were going and what they were doing.
Because the movie knows, like, the movie is smart enough to know what the genre of horror has chiseled into our minds over, you know, the last 100 years of film. It knows every cliche. It knows every trope. It knows every loop around every cliche and every trope. It knows, oh, we know you know this cliche, and we know that you know that the way around this cliche is to do this cliche. We know you know those things. however many steps you think you are ahead of this movie, it's one more.
But not in a pretentious way.
No, not at all. Not just in a way that almost makes me look back and go, how did I not see that? Exactly. Like, how, like, it's not some big, like, you know, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time sort of. It's just me going, oh, I just never considered that.
All right. Jake, reveal your four, hold it, and we're going to throw it to an ad break.
Beautiful. My number four is Anora.
Okay. All right. So we got the top three for the three of us left. We'll throw it to a quick ad break and then we'll get to those.
Just a quick status right now.
Yeah.
Is Strange Darling, as of this moment, the only movie that is officially on all of our top tens?
Yes.
Wow.
But no, but there's another one.
There's another one that you haven't revealed. Yeah.
That I haven't revealed yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does it feel? To know.
How does it feel?
That's still coming up. All right, quick ad break. We'll be back on the other side. And we are back. It is time for the top three films as chosen by the three individual hosts of Real Blend, and it'll lead to the creation of our collective Real Blend top 10 list. Jake, we are at you. You are revealing your number three.
No.
And you are holding it.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. My number three. I was going to be upset if no one else had this.
Okay.
My number three is Civil War.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. Very good. Civil War. Kev, you are giving your number three and you were talking about it.
Wait, you guys don't have this on your list at all?
Or maybe we gave it already.
You must have known, like, it wouldn't be higher than you. Right? Like, I don't know.
No, I thought you guys loved this movie too.
We're getting down to the nitty gritty here.
But I figured that you had the, if it was, it would have been lower than this is what I mean for the other two guys, I think.
Oh, I've seen this movie 7 times.
All right. What is it?
Deadpool Wolverine.
Oh, you got it at 3?
I'm shocked that's not on anyone's list.
I love that movie.
Deadpool's a 4 out of 5.
Oh, I do. I think it's one of the most emotional films I've seen this year. I love Deadpool Wolverine.
Okay. Well, tell us about it.
Shocked. Yeah.
Tell us.
Oh, my God. Oh, I mean, like, let's start off with sound design. I think it has some of the best sound design I've heard in a long time. And Sean, I know, agrees with me on this. There's an entire sequence in the film where Emma's character is with Hugh Jackman and they're in the void.
Oh my
and
God.
She clears his mind of all the horrific things he's going through. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the greatest uses of immersive sound design I've ever seen in my life, because this is a film about redemption and friendship and love. And I think one of the things about Deadpool Wolverine, which is why I don't think a film like this, unfortunately, would end up in an Oscar conversation, is because it's masked as a superhero film, but I genuinely think there is so much good drama in this film. There's a scene where Wolverine rips into Deadpool in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a monologue that I think is one of the greatest of the year. And I genuinely do believe that because the film is R-rated and has a lot of, you know, raunchy humor and jokes, that it's not taken as seriously as other films. Yet at the same time, it's a film that deals with grief and redemption and trauma on a very real level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Deadpool is a funny character, but if you think about the arc of what Deadpool and Wade are trying to do, all Wade's trying to do, and to use a quote of him in the movie, is matter to his friends and mm-hmm. to the woman he loves. And I get that the movie, it feels comedic, and it is, but I also think that there is such good drama. And I think Sean Levy is one of our premier filmmakers. I think from a production design standpoint, prior to Deadpool Wolverine, the MCU was all CGI. Mm. It was just so much CGI. After I saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, was it Quantumania?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I couldn't get over how much CG there was.
And well, I think they're coming back. Honestly, this is a little bit what I'm saying, where we're getting out of that. Some of it was by necessity. You know, I do think in order to shoot some of that stuff, Tom Holland talked pretty openly about how No Way Home, he has a hard time watching No Way Home because of the amount of CGI they had to rely on, because they couldn't shoot out. They couldn't shoot outdoors. They couldn't shoot on location. They couldn't shoot places. I think a lot of that was the limitations of what was being done. Quantumania is one of the examples of just like, that's just a computer program. Like, but it's hardly a movie.
They built Giant Man in this movie. And like, listen, I had Deadpool 1 as my number one of the year when it first came out. I think that these films are more than just the surface level comedy and brutal violence. I think the opening of this film is one of the most exciting openers I've seen in a movie in a long time, with the NSYNC dance sequence. And I just think it's brilliant how they played with James Mangold's world and kind of dug up that Wolverine. I also think that the performances, I think Hugh Jackman, I know it sounds insane, but why isn't he in the Oscar conversation? That is a incredible performance.
If you don't consider that movie as awards,
if he were going to get in the Oscar, if he's not in the Oscar conversation for Logan, he's not going to get into it for Deadpool and Wolverine.
I know, but it doesn't make sense. Why? Like, I find it frustrating that a film like this isn't being talked about more in that type of category, and especially from the sound design perspective. And the score is incredible. And I think it could get a couple of technical. It just has a lot of heart. I think it's a movie that truly, when you go to see it with a large audience, it is a theatrical experience that makes you feel.
The Hall H screening that I saw was one of the greatest things that I've been able to be part of.
That's movies. And I'm not saying this is better than X, Y, and Z, but it has the sauce. It has everything. Comedy, drama.
The only thing I'm going to push back on, and I felt this way about No Way Home, and it's not to diminish the movies at all, but I found that you're right. Like, in a packed theater, like whenever we got to see those movies, it was such an incredible, oh my God, impossible to replicate experience. And I say impossible to replicate because I have found that in a movie like that, that is so, I don't want to say reliant on that theatrical experience with the crowd around you and the audience reactions, that without that, I find that
it
loses a lot, which is why I find that both No Way Home and Deadpool and Wolverine just didn't play as well for me.
It just makes me wonder, though, is that the fault of the movie? When should the movie play best? You know, I don't know.
My argument, real quick, though, before we move on, is I think the best scenes in Deadpool Wolverine aren't the crowd moment. Hmm. It's the smaller moments. It's the scene of the monologue in the car with Jackman and Reynolds. It is, to me, it was their dialogue in, was it Joe's Diner? Like, I love those moments, and I think that that's where the movie really sings, is in those quiet monologues. Because how about Hugh Jackman's moment at the fire with Daphne, when he's talking about like what he did, and like I just think there's such an amazing theme of grief that is dealt with in that film, and redemption, that I just think is just being kind of overlooked because it's an R-rated superhero film.
To me, it's jokes. It's jokes per minute. Like, I mean,
jokes are great, though.
Reynolds is insane. He's insane. Yeah. I mean, the jokes that he gets into this movie are. Oh. I still discover new ones every. Whenever I watch it. Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's so good.
All right, my number three, which has shown up. This is the second movie now that is on all three of our lists. Is A Complete Unknown. I cannot believe that this movie is at number three for me.
Wow, that's super high.
With all due respect to James Mangold, with all due respect to Timothée Chalamet, I'm just not a Dylan guy. Like, I'm not a Bob Dylan guy. Yeah. And I think a big part of the reason why I love this movie so much is because it's not necessarily a Bob Dylan movie, while also being extremely a Bob Dylan movie. To me, it's more interested in the folk music landscape at that time. A lot of those singers and what they were going through, how the music industry was changing, how they were trying to figure out how to make a difference with their songs. And so when you bring in people like Joan Baez, when you bring in Johnny Cash, and the attitudes that they were trying to establish, and Bob Dylan was just at the forefront of that, made for a really interesting story without having to be like, I guess I feared going into it, it was going to be a Bob Dylan biography was, and then he did this, and then he did that, and then he, and this is how he wrote this. And it's not that. It's we're going to skip through a couple of different bits. And what I think the best thing that Mangold does is he embraces the fact that Bob Dylan's an enigma. There's a lot of things about Dylan we're just not going to know. Dylan doesn't share a lot of stuff, and so the movie doesn't try. It accepts a lot of stuff about his mystique, and it moves forward with it. Chalamet's performance left my jaw on the floor.
Yeah,
I mean, he became Bob Dylan. I don't know how. It was incredible. And I couldn't get over how good he was in it. I loved Monica Barbaro. I thought the musical performances were all great. Like, each song got better and better and better. And I just thought that this movie was a complete package from start to finish. Now I'm convinced that if you want to give Mangold a musical biopic, that this is the way to go. So, Complete Unknown, again, only watched it a couple of weeks ago. Haven't had a chance to see it again, but it jumped all the way up to number three for me because I was that impressed by it. Jakey, I know you had it as well too. You put it in it at nine. So that means it was flirting with not being there for a little bit.
You know, it was sort of in that weird, like, I really, really loved it. But again, I'm with you in that I don't particularly love especially music biopics, just the genre, the subgenre itself. I think this is as good of a, you know, for all the problems I have with Bohemian Rhapsody, this feels like the, sort of the opposite. I also love and appreciated that it didn't fall into a lot of the musical biopic tropes that I think James Mangold touched on with Walk the Line, which ended up sort of being made fun of and ruined forever by Dewey Cox. You know, I don't need to see Bob Dylan when he was a kid.
Yeah,
I don't need to see that. You know, I don't. You know, I don't particularly. Most biopics don't need to see them. Like, take me to right before they become the person that I know they are. Okay. And if something happened to me in their childhood that so greatly influenced who they were, then give me a quick little flashback halfway through when they're, you know. But like, I don't oftentimes really need, or find a way to tell me about it without showing me. Mm-hmm. You know. But I really do appreciate that A Complete Unknown really focuses on a very specific 4-year period of his career, the iconic Dylan Goes Electric period, which, you know, everything about it. But it's also, you know, it's not just Chalamet. It's just a collection of performances that, you know, it's a rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. You know, Edward Norton, Monica Barbaro, you know, Elle Fanning. All of them were giving, you know, PJ Byrne, everybody is giving.
Boyd Holbrooke.
Yes, Boyd Holbrooke. there's a moment I was texting the boys about that they've since released online, which the clip is on YouTube. You can find it, of Boyd Holbrooke as Johnny Cash when he's talking about, you know, he's there, he's at this music festival and he's a little hungover and he's explaining to Bob Dylan why he's there alone. And he says something along the lines of like, yeah, June's hanging with her mama. And then he like looks over his sunglasses, like, and all that implies, like just it's those little moments where in one look, he conveyed an entire relationship he has with his mother-in-law that I die laughing every time I see it. And it's those little nuances. I think that's a small example, but it's a lot of those little nuances that to me make that movie just so much more than that genre often is.
Do either of you know why Chalamet has a mustache right now? Is it for
it's for that ping pong movie.
Party Supreme, Josh Safdie's movie.
He's doing a ping pong movie.
It's like a real guy. It's like a
Safdie. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Safdie. I didn't know why he had this thing.
It's him and Kidman, right? Him and Nicole Kidman.
Oh, is it really? Interesting. Yeah. Kev, you had this at six. No, eight. Yes. Eight.
I had it at eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Timothée Chalamet's performance is one of the best performances I've ever seen. And I do think the performance is ultimately better than the movie itself. I love the film, and I was blown away by the live performances and the idea of somebody taking so much time, 6 years almost, to learn and play guitar and sound just like somebody, play their harmonica. It's so hard to pull that off. You're pulling off the physicality, the way he holds himself, the guitar playing, the harmonica playing. I mean, it is remarkable. Monica, incredible, as well as Boyd, as you mentioned, and Elle Fanning. Everybody's great in the film. It's so funny because I say Chalamet's better than the film. There's just a few moments, you know, that there's that thing that happens in like music biopics or biopics where they cut to someone's reactions as the person's having a pivotal moment. they do that a lot in this film, and yeah, there was a few of them where I was like, eh, a little too much. But then there were ones like when they would cut to Edward Norton's face, and his face was so warm and comforting that I was like, I, that I loved seeing his reaction. But they did it a couple too many times.
I had it at number three, which brings us to our number two, which we can talk about, because Jake had it at three and I have it at two. This is Civil War. Now, I'm looking at the, we have twos and ones left. Mm-hmm. This is going to get a little interesting, I think.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's going to get interesting for the Real Blend top five.
It's going to get a little spicy. Civil War, I have not stopped thinking about since I saw it back in March or April. Yeah. It is a movie that I don't know how they did. Like, it's specifically the third act.
Yeah.
The march through Washington into the White House. Mm. I have no idea how Alex Garland filmed it. It's. And I don't want to know. As far as I'm concerned, Alex Garland launched a war in Washington, D.C. Yeah. And destroyed some of our nation's monuments and literally stampeded through the White House. Kayleigh Spaney, again, unbelievable. Her second appearance on my top 10 list. I loved her in Priscilla. I think she's becoming one of my favorite performers. I love the use of the photography throughout it of a war photographer. What do you choose to capture? What do you not choose to capture? I loved the way that the movie brought us all the way up to the line of some things that we might be discussing over the next couple of years with Jesse Plemons about what kind of American are you?
That might be the scene of the year for me.
It could be. I mean, it's,
I think if we had to break down like a top 10, just individual moments, well, I think that's probably my number one.
And then let's put this into the perspective of Garland telling us that it wasn't his part.
Yeah.
And Kirsten Dunst called him up and was like, hey, can you help us out?
Yeah.
And he shows up and delivers that.
No, yeah. He shows up and he goes, and I want to wear these glasses. Yeah. Like literally.
Brilliant. I mean, you know, what's so funny is that like. You know, and I know occasionally, usually at least once a year, there's some sort of supporting actor performance that is like one of those like 5-minute scenes, but they get a nomination. And
sure,
weirdly enough, for this year, it's one that I do not understand, which is Isabella Rossellini for Conclave. Like, she was fine, but I remember like I'm like that's the performance. That's like the 5-minute scene that's, you know, that's for me. If you were going to give an Oscar nomination to any 5-minute actor, they should give it to Jesse Plemons for Civil War.
Yeah. Well, and even Dunst, like I thought Dunst was getting a lot of attention when this movie came out, and it feels like she's an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, like
so good in it.
This whole movie's an afterthought. People don't even really seem to remember that it came out this year.
Yeah.
And I was blown away by it from start to finish, like right from the very beginning with the car bomb experience. And it's like, how close can you get? It's almost similar to September 5. It's an interesting pairing with September 5.
Telling a different story, but looking at it through the prism of journalism
and the urgency of it, you know, and Kayleigh's character figuring out how to shoot and what to shoot and learning from a veteran. I thought Kirsten Dunst was phenomenal in it. I mean, all of it top to bottom is tremendous. And literally that third act, I don't know how they did it.
But I also love that they didn't. There's a lot of stuff that's not explained or at least allows you to say, well, listen, we gave you two here and we're going to give you two here. You can figure out if it adds up to four.
Right.
But we're not going to sit there and just add up the equation for you. You got to do it yourself.
Oh, to that end, like I'm blown away by how apolitical it is. You know, like there were so many people who just dismissed it.
California and Texas.
Sure.
Joining forces like that in and of itself.
But it's not, you know, like it's not preachy. It was never preachy to me of like, I'm taking this stance. It was just if this were the reality, this is what when they detour into the one town that was ignoring that everything was going on.
Yeah.
That might be the scene for me. That might be one of the more chilling scenes.
So funny. Whenever we started airing on my morning show, because I mean, this topic was a talker just before we even know anything about the movie. And you know, we have some people in my newsroom who lean to one side or the other. And by nature of what political side they leaned on, they're like, oh, I'm not going to watch that because it's just going to be this kind of movie.
Sure.
And then having seen it, I went, it's not like I know exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
And it's not that.
Yeah.
All right, Kev, you're number two. We're talking about it.
Wait, this is not on anybody's list?
No. We're talking about
what?
I'm with you, Kev.
All right, hold on a second.
I'm with you.
Gabe, you got to help me out on this one.
I'm with you, buddy. This could be my number one.
Can I take a guess?
Terrifier 3.
I can tell you that The Brutalist made my honorable mentions.
Oh, it's The Brutalist. Blown away that this is not on y'all's list.
It didn't work for Sean, I think. I haven't heard his.
The Brutalist was probably the movie for me that it most kills me not to put on my top 10.
Wow, Jake, I am actually shocked that it's not on your list.
Kev, it's your number two, so take the floor.
I hope I guessed it correctly and didn't just give something away.
It's The Brutalist.
No, it is The Brutalist. And wow. I want Gabe to join in. I think it's one of the most incredible films I've seen in years. Like I think Adrian Brody's performance is, I mean, if Chalamet wasn't in contention this year is contention the right word?
Mm-hmm. Before you go too far, I just want to say this is one of those movies that people even listening right now probably haven't seen because it hasn't made it out very far.
Okay. It's one of the most engaging stories I've ever seen. And what I mean by that is like it to sell the movie, if I were to explain the plot like I just did, it doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like, oh, I want to run out to the theater and watch a 3.5 hour film.
Yeah. Right.
But the way it's done is so remarkable. The cinematography, the score, it's an experience. Even the intermission, which is a 15 minute intermission, to me was engaging. There's music and there's sound design happening behind the intermission title card. Felicity Jones, Guy Pearce, Joe Alwyn. It's so hard to explain this movie. You really can't explain it. Because if I just tell you it's about an architect who's building something, like there's so much that goes into it.
I think the most interesting comparison that and not to give off the wrong impression of what this movie is about, but the Vito De Niro storyline from Godfather 2. It's about like the immigrant experience and finding your place in this country and finding your identity in this country at a time when that was not that it's easy to do for anybody now, but not that at a time when it was particularly difficult for people whose, you know, first image of this country was seeing the Statue of Liberty and finding who they are in this country.
I think we'll have time to talk about it in January because it's going to go wider in January and we may even get a chance to bring some guests on.
You know, not to, I don't want to spend too much time explaining why a movie didn't make my list, but like I said, if I had to numerically rank it right now, I would have put it at 11 when it was the movie that was the hardest for me not to put on my top 10 list. But I always sort of talk about different factors that go into things. I, as much as I loved that movie, and I honestly really truly did love that movie, I have no inclination to ever watch it again. Like I have it available on my, all these movies on my list I want to watch.
Yeah.
Over like when they became available to me, I'm like, oh, I got to press play. I want to say I'm good.
And that's fair. I want to say because I forget. I think maybe I was talking with Kevin or each of you individually at some point. Rewatchability. I want to point out this is a good opportunity to point out that these are your lists. These are your favorite lists. And so what I always say is rewatchability is not the criteria. It is not a criteria that you have to consider, but for you, I think it's for you. And I think that's where the fun of these lists is. You might get a movie that says it doesn't hit the rewatchability for me, but it exceeds on some other level that it oversteps that sort of my personal criteria of rewatchability. It goes the other way around as well.
Yeah. And last point I'll make about The Brutalist, the whole idea of the film, in my opinion, and Gabe, you can tell me if this is going too far, are the things that we put into structures and our lives that are part of ourselves that aren't necessarily known. And I think that's the beauty of filmmaking. And I think that's what the beauty of The Brutalist is.
Yeah, I like it. Jake, you're number two. You are announcing and holding.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is getting spicy.
But then
I know.
I'm doing the math in my head because it feels like...
Well, just do it. We got to do it.
It feels like Kevin...
We gotta go.
All right, my number two, my number two, is The Substance.
Okay. So Jake Hamilton's list for 2024: Long Legs, A Complete Unknown, September 5, Wicked, Challengers, Strange Darling, Anora, Civil War, The Substance, and his number one is
Dune Part Two.
Dune Part Two.
Oh.
And you could talk about it, which was seven for Kevin and I.
Seven for Kevin and you. For me, just listen, we've talked a lot about this movie over the year, but the theatrical experience was the most that. And listen, we were all there together at the junket. Kevin, I want to say maybe you were to my right. Sean, you were to my left.
Yeah.
The most that the theater just melted away. And yeah. I fell through the screen so into this sand. World. It was so dusty. I'm still finding spice in places I didn't know existed. But man, a sequel, you know, and Dune was my the original Dune, the part one was my number one film of the year. I thought this one surpassed it in every technical way. Storytelling, screenplay, the beautiful cinematography, all the performances. I thought so many of the characters who were great in part one were more, even more fleshed out here. I mean, I'm just so enamored with that world and that story and the intricacies, you know, you talk about like the big and the small moments and something like, you know, Wicked, just, you know, to me, Dune exemplified that. Everything, something as small as, you know, Javier Bardem, just knowing that Timothy Chalamet or that Paul Atreides is exactly who he thinks he is or needs him to be. Yeah, you have those small moments that really kind of made me laugh. And then you've got, you know, the three sandworms, you know, just plowing through the sand on their way to go take on the Emperor. You know, Austin Butler's, Fade Rautha's, you know, there's so many. I recently rewatched it just on HBO Max. I have a big ass TV here in my apartment. I have a giant ass TV. But I rewatched it in 4K because I was like, okay, I need to double down. I really need to make sure this is my number one. Mm-hmm. And within 30 seconds of that moment where the Harkonnen soldiers are just like floating up because they got to get out of the sand. I just went, yep. It's my number one. It's done. It's just, it's the sort of experience that after Return of the King ended, I thought, well, we'll never get that again. And now I'm going, oh no, it'll happen. But it happens about once every generation.
All right. Kevin McCarthy's top 10 list. Late Night with the Devil. Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Hell yeah.
A Complete Unknown. Dune 2, Wicked, The Substance, Strange Darling, Deadpool and Wolverine, The Brutalist, and his number one film of 2024 is
Nora.
Nora.
I think this film juggles tone in a way that I have not seen since like early Quentin Tarantino. You're talking about a movie that is equally as intense and awkwardly as hilarious. And it's just so interesting how he juggles this tone, Sean Baker. And the concept, Mikey Madison's performance is, I'm addicted to this film. I feel like I walked out of this movie just like feeling like I was on a high because it was such an incredibly intense, emotional experience. And the ending scene of this film, I think, is one of the best endings I've seen in a long time. This is a character who goes through an incredible arc to become herself truly. And I think the idea of Anora and Annie as separate names and kind of who she is as Annie and who she is as Anora is so fascinating. As Jake's pointed out too, like the living room sequence, for people who aren't aware of this movie, basically her character, you know, okay, everyone knows what it is. So it's my number one of the year. I think Mikey Madison's brilliant. I think she deserves Best Actress at the Oscars. I think Sean Baker is incredible. And I loved this film. I'm in love with this movie. I think it's truly pure entertainment, but also with a lot of heart and a lot of just incredible emotion that juggles tone in a way that I haven't seen in a long time.
Jake, you had it at four.
Yeah, I had it at four. You know, really quickly, you know, whenever people, you ever play a video game and whenever you're choosing what character you want to play and you look at their attributes, it'll say, well, they're really high in strength, but they're low in intelligence. And then you change character and you say, well, they're really high in intelligence, but maybe they're low in strength. You know, there's always sort of that. None of them are ever equal, right? And usually I feel like when a movie is just wildly, brilliantly funny, it's oftentimes not also, you know, usually it's maybe less heartbreaking. Or if it's super heartbreaking, you know, the level of hilarity is usually not that high. Somehow this movie threads the needle between being laugh out loud hilarious. You're right, Kevin, that there's a sequence that takes place in the living room in the middle of the film that I was dying uproariously laughing. And then it leaves you just with your heart shattered in a million pieces. And it kind of flawlessly alternates between back and forth without sort of necessarily giving you sort of this whiplash. But it really perfectly is just blended together. It's a brilliant screenplay by Sean Baker. Mikey Madison gives one of the best performances of the year. Yeah, it's so many different puzzle pieces that should not form into one beautiful portrait somehow all snap together and it all works brilliantly.
It's so great. It's so great. And the relationship that kind of progresses in the film between Honora and Igor, that is so fascinating to watch play out.
Yeah. I'm glad he's getting some supporting acting recognition.
I will be the detractor, and I'll get into Honora at another time because I didn't care for it at all. I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade. I thought the first hour was phenomenal, and the moment they go looking for the Russian kid, that movie just, that's like someone put a pin in it and all the air just went.
Oh no! Out of it. No way!
And then it became a slog.
If you ever go missing, I'm going to point out the whole time we're looking for you. This is boring.
Sean, in your headline, did you call it a snora?
A snora. It's literally like that search for that Russian kid was in real time for,
hope she
for
wins.
11 hours as we looked everywhere for him. I was like, please, God, can we just get to the end of this? All right. Which brings me to my number one. So here's my 10. Alien Romulus, Woman of the Hour, Superman, the Christopher Reeve Story, Dune Part 2, Strange Darling, September 5. Music by John Williams, A Complete Unknown, Civil War, and my number one film of the year is The Substance.
Yes!
Great number one.
Yes!
I put off this movie for the longest time. I didn't see it when it came out. Everybody was talking about the body horror aspect of it. And specifically, someone mentioned something about teeth, and I have a really bad phobia with teeth. But one afternoon as we were getting through the award screeners, I was like, I gotta just watch it. I have to watch it. And man alive, did I have the most fun ever with this movie. It is so smart. It is so well done. It's one of those movies where you sit there and you talk back to it. Like, don't do that. Oh no, don't. No, no, no. What are you going to do? Oh no. What are you doing now? Oh no, no, no. Please don't do that. No. Like, there are rules that it has to follow. The rules are very simple, and you just know that the people are not going to be able to do it. And whenever someone makes a mistake and they call this phone number to say, like, hey, can you do this? Can you reverse this back? And the guy keeps reminding them, there is no her and you.
I want to see a movie about that guy going, Jesus Christ, it's her again.
Or just how many people have tried the substance. He has to keep saying, there is no her and you. It's just you. You're doing it. Demi Moore is incredible. Margaret Qualley is incredible. It is exaggerated, but it never, to me, loses the plot. Like, it stays within the realm of its boundaries. And I've heard people talk about that the final act is too gonzo for them. It goes too far off the rails. The further it went, the harder I laughed and just had the greatest, greatest time with it. Because for people who know, there's a shot where, or there's a chance where something that happened earlier in the film, Margaret Qualley's character is like, well, I can just do it again. And I've seen that in sci-fi films before, of just like, well, it'll be different this time when I do it. And when you realize it wasn't different, it was the greatest reveal in the movie. But then still, even at the very end, there's a very end where there's like a blobby shape. And I was like, well, where is this? Where could you possibly end this story? And the ending that they land on was just chef's kiss times. Amazing.
Corley Farja did such a great job with the film. I mean, like, the practical effects, the budget that they were working with,
it's magnificent.
But at the end of the day, what's brilliant about The Substance is, as over the top as insane as it is the commentary it has about actors and actresses in Hollywood.
Yes.
And I love that Demi Moore got to play this role, because it's fascinating to watch a story fold out and you understand the dramatic emotion that underlies the content, but it's so over the top and ridiculous in terms of like the special effects and the violence that those two come together to form a beautiful relationship, which is a movie.
That's why it works so well. I can't understand why anyone would watch that movie and want to get into the film industry. Like, as an actor.
I would really love to know, this is going to be random, I'd love to know what Jane Fonda thinks of it, because I feel like Demi Moore is clearly
a Jane Fonda
playing a former Oscar winning actress who ends up doing
fitness
workout tapes.
Right. Yeah,
that's, I can't think of another example other than Jane Fonda.
And the sound design in that film is insane.
Okay, get this. It did not make the sound Oscar shortlist.
Oh, wow. The sound is the whole movie. The Oscars besides are the actors.
Stupidest things. Can we just stop talking about them?
I say that because, and this drives me nuts, I feel like the substance will do well at the Oscars above the line, but for some reason, inexplicably below the line, I don't think it's going to do as well as it should.
Oh, I cannot recommend The Substance enough. I'm so glad that it's on everybody's list.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Gabe is going to reveal the real blend.
I'm so excited. I have no idea. I was trying to do the math in my head and I can't figure it out.
All right, folks. So this is how this works. Each, depending on where they're ranked on each individual list, they get a certain amount of points. I add all those up and then we create a top five. That is Real Blend's official top five movies of the year. Fun little stat. We had 18 movies across 30 picks. Which is up from last year. We had 17 movies across 30 picks. So we're getting a little more diverse out there. And we had a couple ties. So the way I do ties, just to give all the information, is these guys submit three honorable mentions. And basically the honorable mentions are worth like half a point. So that if something's tied, but it's in an honorable mention, it'll bump it over something that that it's tied with. If that doesn't break the tie, I just go with which one had the highest ranking on any list. So if something was ranked number three and the other one was ranked highest at number two, but they had ended up with the same points, the one that was at number two gets the tiebreaker. And here is our list for this year. Number five, we have Civil War.
That makes me happy.
Which was on Jake and Sean's list. Civil War was tied with our number four, which is Anora, which was on Jake and Kevin's list. Anora had the higher pick there, obviously. Okay. Number three is Strange Darling on all three of your lists.
I'm here for it.
Nice.
I'm here for it.
And Strange Darling, I think they should put this on the cover. Strange Darling was tied with Dune 2.
Hey. Nice.
I like that. Strange Darling. Wait, is number one The Substance?
And Real Blend's number one movie of the year, by far, the clear winner, not even close. The Substance.
What? That's awesome. I love it. That's amazing. I'm here for it.
We gotta start making little awards. We can send to Coralie Farjad. Just, you know,
That's our number one, baby. I love that.
It's like one of my only movies that, like, as soon as I finished it, I wanted to turn around. Well, I showed it to Michelle the next day. I was like, you have to watch this.
I will say, I love watching it with people.
And you watched it with friends who just hated it.
But then again, what's funny is that I watched it with my parents who I thought were going to hate it and loved it.
Really?
I think they both said
I can't watch that.
They're like, well, got a little silly in the last 5 minutes. But I was like, you know what? If it only took you to the last 5 minutes to start thinking it was getting quote unquote silly,
yeah.
Okay. And honestly, like, basically what they were talking about was the blood shooting everywhere. That was the one thing where they were like, that was a little silly.
Okay. It's a little. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway.
Not the Matrix-style fight scene.
No, they're all about that. Great Real Blend top five.
Yeah, that's great. I'm really happy about that. All right. So it's your turn, guys. Head to the comments down below. Let us know what your top 10 movies of 2024 are. And collectively, thank you so much for supporting the show this entire year. We appreciate you guys so much. We say that Real Blend is a family and a community. We're thrilled to see it grow, and we'll see you guys in 2025. Follow us on social media at all of our different channels. Jake's Takes, Kevin McCarthy TV, Sean_O'Connell, Gabe Kovach. The show is at Real Blend, and until next year, my friends.
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
Thank you.